from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's good. Yes!
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Or trap pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others, like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
It's Big Ten Media Week with Danny and Dusty.
It's got to be America's team. It's got to be America's team. America, that's my favorite kind of team.
Brought to you by the Odyssey app. Jump back to earlier parts of your favorite fan shows on the Odyssey app. The only way to rewind Portland's sports leader.
Big Ten Media Week with Danny and Dusty on 1080.
They like to drink their haterade and eat their hater tots.
The Fan.
You're the best around. Nothing's going to ever keep you down.
A lot of baseball news today. Dylan Cease, no-hitter for the San Diego Padres.
No-hitter
in Padres history.
Went for 50 years of not having them, now two in back-to-back years.
Look at that.
Hot damn.
Look at that. Joe Musgrove, the only other one. Former Astro great. Joe Musgrove.
You would find a way to tie it.
Yeah.
Dylan Cease, over his last three starts against Atlanta, Cleveland, and Washington, batters are just 2-for-65.
That seems good.
Atlanta and Cleveland, are they good at baseball?
That seems good. You know, there's a statistic anomaly that's going to happen, too, in baseball this year. Mm. Have you seen Ellie De La Cruz? He swiped his 51st stolen base of the year. It's pretty good, huh?
Wow.
Yeah, he's on pace for, I believe it's 81 stolen bases this year.
I wonder when the last time was we had somebody hit 100.
Oh, it's been a long time. But you know what's even crazier?
God, is it Ricky?
Or like, what, Vince Coleman, I think, used to do it too?
Yeah, Vince Coleman had a lot.
Yeah.
Let's see here. I don't know. But Ellie De La Cruz also is on pace to strike out 217 times this year.
Ooh, hot damn.
He's about to have 81 stolen bases and 215 strikeouts in a year. To put that into perspective, I think that this might be more impressive. Ricky Henderson, the most strikeouts he ever had in a year, 114 in 1998. In that year, he only had 66 stolen bases. Ellie De La Cruz, it's like if he gets on first base, he's stealing second.
He's gone.
That's nuts to me to think about, like, he currently is obviously league leader in stolen bases by quite a wide margin. He's got 51, and the next closest is Bryce Turang of the Brewers, who's got 31. He's got 20 more stolen bases than anybody, but De La Cruz is second in Major League Baseball in strikeouts. Nolan Gorman of your The St. Louis Cardinals has 136.
You do have to go back to Ricky Henderson before you find somebody with over 100 steals.
Yeah.
At least in the American League. He did it 3 out of 4 years from 1980 to 83. And then Vince Coleman 3 straight years in, what was it, I think 85 to 87.
Wow.
But that's it.
Okay. When's the last time we had somebody swipe 81?
81. Let's see here.
Because that.
Searching.
That's
searching.
Still that's a pretty big number. Last year,
Jose Reyes was 78 in 07.
Okay.
All steals right. were not only devalued.
Marquise Grissom, 78 in 1992. Yeah. 81, you have Vince Coleman in 1988.
God. All right. Vince Coleman.
Like, steals were so devalued by the
analytics
that it just cratered.
And Ricky Henderson, 1988 with 93.
Wow. National League wins a. National League would have been...
That would have been Vince Coleman.
Vince Coleman, yeah. 81 and 88. Goodness gracious.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, since... Yeah, so in either league then, you said Ricky Henderson,
going back to the 80s in both leagues.
Yeah. Think about that. It's 36 years ago, right? Yeah. 36 years. Mm-hmm. It's been since somebody swiped 81, and De La Cruz is on pace for that right now.
And Ellie's not 5'6".
No.
Running a billion miles an hour. He's 6'5".
Big ass dude.
Just hauling.
Yeah.
Watching him steal bases is a blast. Isn't because it? He is so big and he covers so much ground. It's like, whoa.
Yeah, it just sucks. He plays for the Reds.
Right? Get him to
Reds would be fun if
same division, just better Red team. Go to the Cardinals.
No. Like, get him on like an actual team that'll win a World Series.
Well, excuse me, sir.
This year. Or next year.
Nice save.
Or the year after that.
Second most World Series titles ever.
Cool. That's awesome.
Mm-hmm. It is.
That's really great. That's really great. Mm. 53 and 49. Mm. They'd be leading the AL West, though.
Yep.
Alongside the Houston Astros.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So there's baseball stuff for you. We have a no-hitter today. No-hitters are cool.
He had to campaign for it.
Yeah. He said that he had to lobby for it in the seventh inning to keep him in the game, which I think that sucks in baseball now that we're pulling guys during no hitters.
Like,
I understand if it's like, I don't know, if like you're in a playoff run and
I don't.
Do you want to save guys' arms for getting into the playoffs? But at the same time, like, it's July.
Yeah. Well, this whole like 80 pitch count stuff is just nonsense.
Well, It's all about keeping them around, though.
But there's also been a bunch of studies now that show that if you don't throw enough, you're more likely to get injured.
Yeah. But the Padres, they're in the thick of it for a playoff spot. So I guess he had to lobby, but it's July. Let him throw it.
Here's some more history on what Cease has done. A complete list of every pitcher in Major League Baseball history to have a 3-start run with 25 plus strikeouts and only 2 hits allowed. Dylan Cease, and that's it.
Oh, that's pretty good.
30 Ks and 2 hits in three straight outings.
All right. Well, hey, let's get back to Big Ten Media Days. Big Ten Media Days on the Fan are brought to you by Mods PDX, the future of building is here, and as well by Legends Casino. Fun is how we roll. Sharon Moore, the head coach at the University of Michigan, harnessing his former boss in Jim Harbaugh.
Much.
But Jim Harbaugh in L.A. also harnessing Jim Harbaugh and taking shots at Ryan Day somehow, some way. We'll get to Big Ten Media Days next on the Fan.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's gone. Yes.
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Horse rat pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/AtBat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
One last baseball note. Deal tweeted in or texted in on the Vancouver Ford text line, 503-864-6326. How many strikeouts did Tony Gwynn have in his entire career? We were talking Ellie De La Cruz. He could swipe 81 bags and strike out 215 times this year for the Reds. Tony Gwynn struck out 435 times in his career. He played for 20 years.
Good Lord.
Which means he averaged 29 strikeouts a year. The last 12 and a half seasons combined, he struck out 215. Of his 20-year career, the final 12 and a half, he struck out 215 times. That's not bad.
That's such an obscene total and stat.
Yep. Tony Gwynn, his stats will always blow my mind. Always. Always.
I don't even know what to do with that.
Kurt Cignetti and Dan Lanning are kind of stealing the headlines today with the quotes that they have popping off, as Cignetti is saying, we're just going to the Rose Bowl to go into an old stadium to kick a team's ass in UCLA mm-hmm. in September. Sounds like a good plan.
I'm a Cignetti fan.
Dan Lanning, we'll have some quotes from Dan Lanning because he went on Pat McAfee and he was feeling himself on Pat McAfee mm-hmm. and on Dirt and Sprague this morning with Sprague and Ortner talking about recruiting NIL.
And also not caring about what we think.
No, he doesn't care.
It was great.
He has zero cares in the world. But Sharon Moore is also at Big Ten Media Days today. He is the head coach at the University of Michigan, taking over for Jim Harbaugh on the national championship team. And this is Moore, and he channels his inner Jim Harbaugh so well right here.
Win the big games, beat our rivals, beat Ohio State. Win the Big Ten, go to college football playoff. And win it. For us, that's something we strive to do. Tough, smart, dependable, relentless, enthusiastic, and together is how I'll describe our team. We're going to do everything we can to strive for perfection. Everything we do every day is a process, and we'll continue to strive to do that. And we'll continue to do that with contagious enthusiasm unknown to mankind.
Contagious enthusiasm unknown to mankind.
If we played that without saying it was Sharon Moore, and we're just like, who do you think this is? It sounds like Harbaugh.
Here,
there's no offense. Well, there's no defense. It's a we-fence.
Contagious enthusiasm unknown to mankind is actually a Jack Harbaugh motto, because Oregon fans know this because Willie Taggart. That was his introductory press conference, as we are going to attack every day with a contagious enthusiasm unknown to mankind. It is every Harbaugh says that. Mm-hmm. And every coach in the Harbaugh mold goes and says that. And this is like where you go, he's not changing the expectations, doesn't want to change the trajectory. He wants everything to be the same at Michigan. And this is the caution that you have, is when you're following the giant, don't follow too close. Right?
And this is the thing, is you have to still be yourself. And not try to be somebody else, because we've seen so many times when coaches try to be somebody else. In my own personal experience in the military, you see when one leader leaves, another leader comes in and they try to lead the exact same way, where one, colonel that I had did not rah-rah things, did not push a lot of buttons, but led quietly from the front. And then, you know, a younger lieutenant colonel came in and tried to do the exact same thing. And they were like, buddy, you don't have the 25 years of experience that he had. Your experiences are different. You can't go do those things. And it's the same kind of thing. Anytime you're trying to lead large groups of people, you have to lead your way. You can take things from, hell, let's go to football. Josh McDaniels trying to be Bill Belichick. Remember the whole thing about him getting pushed out? Don't you crap on the Patriot way. That's how we do things in New England. Buddy, you're in Las Vegas.
Yeah.
Like you
well, it was in Denver, and then Romeo Crennel had the same thing. Charlie Weiss had the same thing. Like, the list goes on with the Belichick disciples, and like, that's where you go. You have to carve your own path. Yes. And I think Gerard Mayo is doing that in New England, which is way better.
Yeah.
I mean, he actually just says things that make sense. Like, hey, by the way, we are going to be going ahead and saying right now, Drake May, not that guy. Yeah. Jacoby Brissett is a pro coming out of spring.
We're
Drake
May's
not there yet. That's things that Belichick would have never said, right? He would have just been,
we'll figure it out.
Can't be that. Yeah. And that's kind of the caution for Sherrone Moore, even though I think with the fact that Harbaugh was suspended last year and guys got to know his voice in that locker room, there's a lot of different ones in there, but the guys that were there last year bought into that, and you saw kind of the emotion boiling over after that Penn State game where he was crying about doing it for Jim Harbaugh. You can't fly too close to the sun, especially when you're talking about Harbaugh. But this is the thing with Jim Harbaugh, is that he keeps going back time and time again to a lot of the same stuff over and over again. And this was seen when he was at Michigan as a shot at Ryan Day and the Ohio State Buckeyes. When I believe this was 2021. He says sometimes people stand on third base and think they hit a triple, right? Mm-hmm. That's like a Harbaugh thing, but there's like a huge speech that went into it. Posted in the Chargers locker room right now is, welcome to the 2024 Chargers locker room, your football home. We want to compliment all of you who've earned the opportunity to get here and recognize the journey traveled and how we'll be playing at the highest level of football. None here were born on third base, but rather had to work their way to first, then second, then third. Congratulations on taking your life circumstances and turning them into successes. It's so, like, word for word, the none here were born on third, but rather had to work from first to second to third. That is exactly what Harbaugh said about, and people said this is about Ryan Day because he took over Urban Meyer's team.
Yes.
He's done a really good job. But
he took
that shot.
Took over the Ferrari.
And everybody's like, Day one of the Chargers. That is the words that every Chargers player saw when they walked into the locker room. The Harbaughs go to the well more than anybody else.
See, Bosa's a Buckeye.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to think of anybody else on that Chargers team a Buckeye.
I'm sure there's about two or three.
Yeah.
There's about every NFL team.
There's like a couple, three, yeah. You think they read that and were like, I don't think
I've heard this before. You're not getting past me with this, but Bosa's probably hurt. So, Brian Nunn. Wait, was that unfair?
No. Entirely warranted.
No,
but also, it would, even with, as Harbaugh's coaching the Chargers, any time he could, you know, just fire one off at not even just the Buckeyes, but literally anyone in his past. If there was a chance to fire one off at Pete Carroll if he was still coaching right now, whether it was in Seattle or at USC, where, you know, he went to war with them in San Francisco against the Seahawks and at Stanford in USC. If he found a way to do that, I think he would.
Yeah. I like Sherrone Moore, though. I wonder how he's going to do.
He's well put together.
Yeah. And we saw results with Harbaugh being out last year and their ability to keep things on the rails. But it's not just the loss of Jim Harbaugh. It is the loss of the staff and then all of the players that are on to the NFL and moved on. That is huge for Michigan. And moving forward, Wink Martindale is their new defensive coordinator who has an NFL background. You have a lot of shoes to fill. We heard Jed Fish talking about this with Washington. One of the things that he admired the most is that everybody followed him from Arizona. Like, everybody followed him, not just the players on the roster, but all of his coaches said, nope, we're going to come with you. We're going to continue to build because the experience at Arizona is what we signed up for, and you stayed true to that. We're going to come with you. There are guys that left that Michigan staff, and they went, hey, we're true to you, Jim Harbaugh. We are going to go with you to the L.A. Chargers. And it's massive shoes to fill on both sides of play calling and then the roster itself.
I think the counter argument you can make here for following Harbaugh's footstep is that the familiarity and the sense of stability, the little sayings, the little altruisms, they ring a little more true because of Moore's history and because of his, and it allows the transition to make a little bit more sense. I think if you're looking for the way to look at this a little bit differently,
It's really hard though, because but even what does that success look like though? Because we're talking about Ryan Day. Ryan Day takes over for Urban Meyer after he leaves, and he can win 11 and 12 games a year. He can go and lose a national title game. He can go and play in the college football playoff in Georgia because of a field goal at the end of the game against Georgia in the semifinals. You're not in the championship game. Remember what Georgia did to TCU in the championship game that year? They waxed them. Absolutely waxed them. But, oh, they lost in the semifinals to a Georgia team. They should have won that game. They have been knocking on the door, but you're not as good as the guy before you because he won the national title. He fulfilled the mission, and that is where your leash gets shorter and shorter as these head coaches following the footsteps of Giants. And look, give Alabama a ton of credit because what did they do? They replaced Nick Saban with a guy. They went new blood. They didn't say, we're going for a Michigan man or we're going to hire from within. We're going to go outside and find the best damn coach that we can. And that they found Kalen DeBoer up in Seattle and they brought him down to Alabama and said, all right, we're going to start with something new here. It could backfire.
Yeah.
Could backfire. But Kalen DeBoer's one. Kind of, he's Kirk Cignetti.
But also, would you try to replicate Nick Saban?
No, you can't.
No,
you can't. And that's what Michigan's going to try to do because they went the route of not finding a Michigan man after Lloyd Carr. And look how Rich Rodriguez turned out. Look how Brady Hoke turned out. Wasn't great for them.
Even
though they were still pretty good. So
Brady Hoke fell asleep.
Yeah, he did. As the Oregon defensive coordinator.
I know.
sleep man.
Sleepy.
All right, coming up next, it's the worst day on the web. Don't like tourists? Well, maybe a couple of local businesses internationally have found a way to deal with them. But first, here's the Big Kahuna Sports Center update.
Hamburgers, the cornerstone of any nutritious breakfast.
This is a Big Ten Media Week edition of Danny and Dusty.
Brought to you by the Odyssey app.
On 1080 The Fan. It's time for today's worst day on the web. With Danny and Dusty on Odyssey and 1080 The Fan.
Oh, really? That sucks.
If you're a traveler and you've been to international countries and you're familiar with the tourism sector of the world and how it pertains to restaurants, or if you're somebody who's lived abroad and seen the tourism demand of big cities and what it can do, you're not unfamiliar with the strains that exist out there that can be a little bit, a bit of a pain if you're a person that's either regional or just a passerby. Japan is still struggling post-COVID with the tourism industry. They only fully opened in late of July 2022. I believe Souk just got back from there, what, 6 months ago, 8 months ago? Was that last year?
I think it was last year.
It was last year. It all blends together. But right now, the yen is currently performing way below the dollar. So it makes it really convenient for Americans or people who deal in American currency to go to Japan. Although expensive to get there, it's cheap to get in there. The issue that they're dealing with there is an overpopulation or overcrowding of tourism zones, and it's keeping locals out. So the way that they are combating this is they aren't overcharging tourists, but they are giving discounts to locals.
What?
So
see, this is what I always thought happened. Like when you go, this happens like when you go to New York City and you're like, Times Square, stay away from it.
You're expensive.
You're paying like $14 for a beer, you got to go find a neighborhood.
Yes, you got to go like three blocks away.
You got to tuck into the neighborhoods there, and you're going to find a $10.50 beer instead.
Get into the bodega.
Golly.
So this is at an all-you-can-eat seafood grill in Shibuya, which is the big shopping district in Tokyo. One of the owners says he offers 1,000 yen or a $6.50 discount to locals.
All right.
So this is happening. But the reasoning is for this is interesting. He said that that we need this pricing system for cost reasons. And I'm like, well, no, you just overcharge the expensive tourists and make more money.
Yeah.
Because the thing that they want here is they don't want to be tourist establishments, which I find to be interesting because it's not based on business alone, whereas the business has a cultural impact.
Yeah.
Because you still want to be a part of the local scene.
Yeah, and I think like the idea behind that is like a small business owners, tourists will come and go, but your local base are ones that
there.
Will keep you alive in non-touristy seasons. And I think that I understand that line of thinking. And hell, if I were to sit here in Portland and be like, you get a locals discount, we all love locals discounts, right? Mm-hmm. You're going to be flooded with locals around here. I think if I were to get a good deal anywhere, I'd be like, yep, I'm going to go and I'm going to sign up because that place cares about me who lives in the community, lives in the area. Mm-hmm. I'm for it.
This isn't the only thing that's going on in Japan right now
to
influence tourism negatively. In response, places around the country have begun implementing tourist taxes, imposing visitor caps, and even banning alcohol sales in an attempt to curb the effects of too much tourism. Which is really interesting because there's two sides to this coin of what I'm about to say. There's also an area, the base of Mount Fuji, where they have put up nets to keep people from flocking to and taking pictures because it's like this cobblestone road that goes uphill. It's very picturesque. It's got like the Japanese gate. It's all with the cherry blossoms. It's an incredible photo. Well, it's like every other influencer photo place in the world right now where the photo itself looks incredible, but if you flip the camera around, it's a pile of 500 people gaggling of like
it's like the Leaning Tower of Pisa.
Yes, there's nothing romantic about it. Or if you go to the blue topped buildings in Greece.
Yeah.
I'm totally blanking on the name of the city.
Doesn't matter.
Little coastline.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
You know what I'm talking about. Yep. Like, it used to be like this tranquil, peaceful, like when I went through there 20 years ago, it was a touristy area, but it was like just a touristy area. Now it's just nothing but people with selfie sticks.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, oh, for the love of God. But on the flip side of this, there's also residents in the same region where not a skyscraper, but an apartment complex was built and it became an eyesore. And so culturally, they tore it down because it blocked the view of Mount Fuji. So it's kind of like it's this interesting give and take culturally in Japan.
Yeah, there's that's like when you go down into Southern California, when you go into like Laguna Beach, they have, if you're going to build something, they put up like these line it, and they put little flags if they're going to build a new building so people can see where the rooftops will be moving forward. Mm-hmm. And if you object, you can go to like the city council and be like,
it's blocking my view.
We're not going to build that thing. But to
have property,
to build it and then tear it down, that's another level.
And then they went through all the processes and everybody agreed and it was okay. And they were just like, nope.
Here's my question about this though. Well, going back to the giving the locals a discount and upcharging tourists, say I am in Tokyo and I am visiting a friend over there who is a local, lives there. We both go out to eat. We get the bill. We're sitting at a table together.
Mm. You get the gaijin charge?
Yeah. Do I get the white guy charge? Uh-huh. And he gets the normal? Or yeah. Is he going to just say, I got the bill on this one, and then I can pay him back and just be like, no, this is the locals discount, not the tourist discount. Because what if we ordered the exact same thing and mine's like $20 more?
Why is my sushi so much more? It's going a step further where they're saying
from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands.
thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches, because the way these ball players are hitting them, yeah, they'd need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others, like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
This is a Big Ten Media Week edition of Danny and Dusty,
brought to you by the Odyssey app
on 1080 The Fan. It's time for today's worst day on the web with Danny and Dusty on Odyssey and 1080 The Fan.
Oh, really? That sucks.
If you're a traveler and you've been to international countries and you're familiar with the tourism sector of the world and how it pertains to restaurants, or if you're somebody who's lived abroad and seen the tourism demand of big cities and what it can do, you're not unfamiliar with the strains that exist out there that can be a little bit, a bit of a pain if you're a person that's either regional or just a passerby. Japan is still struggling post-COVID with the tourism industry. They only fully opened in late of July 2022. I believe Souk just got back from there, 6 months ago? 8 months ago? Was that last year?
I think it was last year.
It was last year, and it all blends together. But right now, the yen is currently performing way below the dollar. So it makes it really convenient for Americans or people who deal in American currency to go to Japan. Although expensive to get there, it's cheap to get in there. The issue that they're dealing with there is an overpopulation or overcrowding of tourism zones, and it's keeping locals out. So the way that they are combating this is they aren't overcharging tourists, but they are giving discounts to locals.
What?
So
see, this is what I always thought happened. Like when you go, this happens like when you go to New York City and you're like, Times Square, stay away from it.
You're expensive.
You're paying like $14 for a beer, you got to go find a neighborhood.
Yes, you got to go like three blocks away.
You got to tuck into the neighborhoods there, and you're going to find a $10.50 beer instead.
Get into the bodega.
Golly.
So this is at an all-you-can-eat seafood grill in Shibuya, which is the big shopping district in Tokyo. One of the owners says he offers 1,000 yen or a $6.50 discount to locals.
All right.
So this is happening. But the reasoning is for this is interesting. He said that we need this pricing system for cost reasons. And I'm like, well, no, you just overcharge the expensive tourists and make more money.
Yeah.
Because the thing that they want here is they don't want to be tourist establishments, which I find to be interesting because it's not based on business alone, whereas the business has a cultural impact.
Yeah.
Because you still want to be a part of the local scene.
Yeah, and I think like the idea behind that is like a small business owner is tourists will come and go, but your local base are the ones that will keep you alive in non-touristy seasons. And I think that I understand that line of thinking. And hell, if I were to sit here in Portland and be like, you get a locals discount, we all love locals discounts, right? Mm-hmm. You're going to be flooded with locals around here. I think if I were to get a good deal anywhere, I'd be like, yep, I'm going to go and I'm going to sign up because that place cares about me who lives in the community, lives in the area. Mm-hmm. I'm for it.
This isn't the only thing that's going on in Japan right now
to
influence tourism negatively. In response, places around the country have begun implementing tourist taxes, imposing visitor caps, and even banning alcohol sales in an attempt to curb the effects of too much tourism. Which is really interesting because there's two sides to this coin of what I'm about to say. There's also an area, the base of Mount Fuji, where they have put up nets to keep people from flocking to and taking pictures because it's like this cobblestone road that goes uphill. It's very picturesque. It's got like the Japanese gate. It's all with the cherry blossoms. It's an incredible photo. Well, it's like every other influencer photo place in the world right now where the photo itself looks incredible, but if you flip the camera around, it's a pile of 500 people gaggling of like
it's like the Leaning Tower of Pisa.
Yes, there's nothing romantic about it. Or if you go to the blue topped buildings in Greece.
Yeah.
God, I'm totally blanking on the name of the city.
Doesn't matter.
Little coastline.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
You know what I'm talking about. Yep. Like, it used to be like this tranquil, peaceful, like when I went through there 20 years ago, it was a touristy area, but it was like just a touristy area. Now it's just nothing but people with selfie sticks.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, oh, for the love of God. But on the flip side of this, there's also residents in the same region where not a skyscraper, but an apartment complex was built and it became a eyesore. And so culturally, they tore it down because it blocked the view of Mount Fuji. So it's kind of like it's this interesting give and take culturally in Japan.
Yeah, that's like when you go down into Southern California, when you go into like Laguna Beach, they have, if you're going to build something, they put up like these string line it, and they put little flags if they're going to build a new building so people can see where the rooftops will be moving forward. Mm-hmm. And if you object, you can go to like the city council and be like,
it's blocking my view.
We're not going to build that thing. But to
because
build
if you
it,
have property, yeah.
To build it and then tear it down, that's another level.
And they went through all the processes and everybody agreed and it was okay. And they were just like, nope.
Here's my question about this though. Well, going back to the giving the locals a discount and upcharging tourists, say I am in Tokyo and I am visiting a friend over there who is a local, lives there. We both go out to eat. We get the bill. We're sitting at a table together.
Mm. You don't. You get the gaijin charge?
Yeah. Do I get the white guy charge? Uh-huh. And he gets the normal? Or yeah. Is he going to just say, I got the bill on this one, and then I can pay him back and just be like, no, this is the locals discount, not the tourist discount. Because what if we ordered the exact same thing and mine's like $20 more?
Why is my sushi so much more? It's going a step further where they're saying they're also considering charging tourists more than six times a local entry fee to World Heritage sites like the Himeji Castle.
Oh, all right. Well, I guess I won't be going to Japan anytime soon.
Vancouver Vortex Line, Santorini, Greece. Thank you.
Yeah.
That was the blue rooftop buildings. Like, for love of God, I could not.
Yeah, and the Vancouver Vortex Line also with the Pyramids of Giza, where you go, and if you just look the opposite direction, it's a city. The Taj Mahal's another one.
Oh, God. It's one of the worst, like, culture crises on the planet, because you have this palace of opulence, and literally on the other side of the fence, you have some of the poorest people on the planet.
Yeah, which was used for a long time to depict the caste system that they had in India, and ta-da. We're like, okay, things aren't really fair here.
Yeah, so you can decide whether or not you want to go to Japan to see if you can maybe find a little bit of a discount just because of the exchange rate, but just know that
they're going to find you on the other end.
Yeah.
All right.
See,
look at this. This is knowledge. Knowledge is power. The more you know.
And it's another note to make sure that you don't go to the heavy touristy places.
And that's how we roll here.
The more you know.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that if I I really do want to go to Japan. I've never been there. I got a former player that I stay in contact with who's in the Air Force. He's stationed in Japan, and he says he loves going to Tokyo. You know, when he gets leave, he heads on into Tokyo and has a blast there. But that flight is really long, too. Pacific Ocean, not small. Not small. And if you're going over there and you're like, I'm going to get a deal, and then you get there and you're like, this is not it. This is why these are important.
Look, the flight,
look out for the white guy charge.
The flight is
the American charge, too.
But you can find places to stay very inexpensively.
Cool.
So,
all right.
And also, just for a more, you know, situation, you can buy real estate over there as a foreigner.
Oh, can you?
Yeah, it's one of the few places that you can still.
All right.
Without being an actual citizen, you can own land over there. All right, coming up next, there's a lot of news coming out of the NBA on the business side of things, including what it could mean for a potential renewal of an I-5 rivalry. That and more coming up here on Danny and Dusty, Danny the Fan. Over the last couple days, we talked about the changing landscape of the NBA's new TV/media deal and the implications that it holds for the league going forward, because it's not just where it is and how you're going to get it, but what it means for the potential return of expansion, particularly to Seattle.
Yeah, it's one thing Adam Silver's always said, is once we get a new TV deal done, we will then start having that conversation about expansion. I think an 11-year, $76 billion TV deal, I think that's probably the one that he was talking about.
Yeah, and publicly, at the address at Summer League, he downplayed expansion for the first time over the last couple of years. And what that is telling you is, remember, who does Adam Silver work for? The owners. What are the owners therefore saying? We want more money.
Mm-hmm. In expansion fees.
In the new team rights. That's what that is. Them saying we're good at 30, we don't want to split the pie between 30 and now 32 teams. Pay no attention to the man behind the glass. That is absolutely, unbelievably, horribly misguided. Look over here, look over here, look over here.
Or they're in a situation where they're like, okay, so we want to go to Vegas and Seattle, but LeBron's still playing, and we know he's going to be a part owner in Vegas, so we can't really have this happening now.
Well, not just that.
We need Bronny to flame out this year, so then they trade him to Vegas, and LeBron goes and signs there on his new team.
Well, I mean, there's also the idea of LeBron James might have to divest from the Fenway Sports Group if Fenway Sports Group ends up buying the Boston Celtics, because what do they own? The Boston Red Sox. They are Fenway Sports Group. So, therefore...
And the Man U? Or...
Liverpool.
Yeah.
And so there's some stuff there. But the other thing here is that they're saying they want to drive the price up. And one of the things that I was talking to movers and shakers about in Las Vegas was expansion and what the numbers are looking like. And
we're still looking at a half bill for expansion fee. I'm talking just the expansion rights fee.
Billions for just the rights.
Oh boy.
Upwards of $7 billion to get a new team, whether it's Seattle or Las Vegas. Because
for just the expansion rights? That's not including launch?
That's expansion price.
I'm just talking about you pay the league just for the right to pay more billions of dollars
to start your team. Billions for just rights fees for just the expansion team.
Jeez.
Yes. That is because here's what has changed. There are multiple interested parties. It's not just LeBron James and Fenway Sports Group, as much as they would like it to be that in Las Vegas.
You've got, the last expansion fee. Do you know what the last expansion fee was?
$300 million?
Yep. The Charlotte Bobcats back in 2004 paid $300 million.
Yeah.
That, and then it'll be about, $2.5 billion now?
Yeah, I think the number that I was told was somewhere between 2.2 and 2.5. For just the rights.
At that point, you've got to wonder, all right.
You're not getting singular owners.
How much more are we going to be able to make here?
They're doing this is because this is the last TV deal where linear TV is a part of this. That's an 11-year deal. Linear TV in 11 years will probably not exist.
Yeah.
Whew. And so what they're looking at now is we've got the money that we've got now, so we need to make sure that we get a massive expansion rights fee to also help sustain ownership, because they are going to be giving up shares, small, but they will be giving up some. So they have to eat that first, and then they also have to find a way to make more money on it. So if you're injecting roughly $5 billion into it, that can cover up for your losses and get the
that is so crazy
the payouts for it. Now, as this pertains to expansion locally, as in the I-5 rivalry in Seattle, the group that has consistently come up as wanting to make the move is the ownership group of the Seattle Kraken.
Yeah, which also has Amazon
already backed
CEOs in it. Climate yes. Pledge Arena obviously is an Amazon is
named rights building.
Naming rights. You've got money into the Kraken already. And oh wait, who's the new partner broadcasting games?
Oh, Amazon.
Oh, I don't know. That may seem like a little bit of a conflict of interest, but we're not going to pay attention to that, apparently.
Yeah. So you've got Lewicki, who is the face of the Kraken.
Yeah, Todd Lewicki.
Yeah, and he, while they have not been public about this, I have heard multiple discussions that they are the interested party. God, I'm blanking on his name. Chris Hansen, the one that fell face first.
To catch predator. No.
No. Fell face first in trying to bring Seattle back and taking Sacramento and going far too public, far too often, and way too loudly.
Way too early.
Has been, I was told, had been blacklisted, would not be allowed to be a part of an ownership group. However, I have since been told that that has changed if he wanted to be a silent partner, which is, this is the way things are going, and this is what's important for the Portland Trailblazers. If you're one of those people who's like, Jody Allen needs to sell! Phil Knight probably never going to be a owner of the Trailblazers. Now, could one of his kids in a couple of years, however that trust issue gets worked out, both through Nike and through the Trailblazers? Perhaps, but not as probably as an individual. Not because he doesn't have the money, but because the leagues now, unless you're Jeff Bezos or Elon Musk or Steve Ballmer, I'm talking one of the five richest people on the planet, the league wants ownership groups. Now, somebody still has to have the...
Why do they want the ownership groups, though? I mean, I understand
capital.
They're necessary because of the fact that these franchises are so expensive, mm-hmm. but ownership groups get business muddied up.
Yes.
And you have so many big swinging you-know-whats in mm-hmm. a room. At that point, they're just going to start bickering with each other.
Which you have in Minnesota. But they want still somebody with major capital. Like they want the Ballmers of the world. If Jeff Bezos,
obviously you need majority ownership.
Yes,
yeah.
But they still want that. But because it's getting so big, and I was talking to somebody about this at Las Vegas. Victor Wembanyama is very likely going to be the sports first contracted $100 million a year athlete in North America.
Mm-hmm.
When that happens in 8 or 9 years and he's being paid $110 million a year and is a 5-year deal worth $580 million, they're going to need to, these ownership groups are going to need to put $300+ million in escrow. To be able to do that across the league, you have got to have cash pools heretofore not
and that's
present.
That's where I was saying, at what point do you sit there with the expansion fees, mm-hmm. with the money, are people going to be like, all right, how much are we going to really be able to make off this? Because rich people will find it not to be as valuable anymore of an asset. If they're like, all right, so I have to put this much money up front, and then I have to commit on an annual basis X amount of dollars, mm-hmm. at some point, just like stolen bases in baseball, right? They were devalued by analytics. You're going to sit there and go, all right, is this really going to be where all of these franchises are going to continue to sell for record upon record upon record? Because, look, I know inflation's going up, but at some point the price point's got to go too high, yeah. and people are going to want to be getting out. And I think that for the leagues themselves, this is a really slippery slope, though. Mm-hmm. If you want that many cooks in your kitchen, if you have 32 NBA franchises eventually, and all of them you want to have ownership groups in, if those groups are, you know, 6 to 10 billionaires, at what point are you going, all right, who do we listen to and who do we tell to take a hike? Because you have far more owners than you do. You're looking at like 200 owners for 32 teams. And all of them feel like they should have a voice because they're putting up billions of dollars.
And you're putting up billions of dollars for the expansion teams before you even get to see anything.
Yikes. That's crazy. I'm interested to see how this works out, but it is fascinating that this is the first time that Adam Silver has not said boo about expanding in the NBA, because he's asked about it at Summer League. He's asked about it at the NBA Finals. He's asked about it at the All-Star break, at the State of the NBA. He's asked about it at the very beginning of the year when they do the kickoff series.
So you see all of these different mark points, and now what has changed is that they're not talking about it happening is such a amazing thing. And it's like, oh yeah, they know that there's money on the table.
Yeah.
That's what this is.
Man.
And
they're still going to be really rich.
Yeah. And that's the thing and you're trying to get now while the getting's good.
Yeah.
Because you never know what the cycle is going to look like. And that's, I think when this is all said and done, what we're looking at right now is the first mark will be what this Boston team sells for. And the thought process right now is one of the biggest brands in the world, not just in basketball, but in the world. It's going to sell for upwards of $6.5 billion.
And they're going to have a payroll they're paying $50 million more in luxury tax than they are actually on the roster.
And wait till all of the contracts kick in next year.
Because Sam Hauser got $45 million.
I throw my hands up.
Holy guacamole.
So also the TNT did also issue a statement basically saying that we're very disappointed with the NBA.
And oh, no way.
We're going to be seeking legal recourse, which, like I said, what was it, Monday? There will be lawyers. TNT's going to sue.
I can't wait until Inside the NBA is just Inside Basketball.
And on Amazon?
It's on TNT, and they don't show highlights. It's Kenny and Chuck and Shaq reenacting what happened on the floor because they'll have no rights to show any of the footage from those games. And yet every player in the NBA will go on with them because they love Kenny, Shaq, Charles, and Ernie.
What if I also told you that ESPN now has the right for NBA Red Zone?
That's so stupid.
It's not Red Zone, but it is a live whip-around coverage, game to game to game, every game. ESPN has the rights to a studio show to give a damn about basketball.
Yeah.
Because it's
a highlight show. It's not like Red Zone, because like when you said that, I was like, that's dumb, because Red Zone is scoring opportunities. Yeah. You're in
Which
the red
is
zone.
Every possession in the NBA.
You're just like, every time we go up the floor,
they're going to score.
But this is what this is what ESPN wants, is because the NBA is a highlight driven league. And what do all the kids take in on social media? They watch and take in basketball via highlights now.
And the terrible thing is, I read some of the verbiage from the ESPN press release. The player walk-ins was emphasized like a half dozen times.
What about the Stephen A. Smith walk-ins? Are we going to have those? That still bothers me.
It does. But that's the thing, is they made sure to drive home culture and lifestyle and fashion. And I'm like, can we make the game about the game?
No, that's not what ESPN does anymore.
God.
It isn't. And that's what sucks. It's like
they're taking the entertainment part of this as opposed to
I remember
to the sports part
walking
of this.
Waking up every morning, walking downstairs, and you put SportsCenter on and you get ready for school.
Yep.
That was
our childhood.
That's what you did.
Yes.
And then when you got home from practice, you caught up on everything, watching SportsCenter at night, and they don't even care about giving you that anymore.
No, it's talk shows.
Get Up and First Take, and we got First Things First on FS1, and they're all bad.
Yeah.
Oh, they're all bad.
As opposed to giving us SportsCenter.
Yes. And I don't know where they got that. And well, I mean, people are watching, obviously, but I don't know why people are watching First Take still. Because their whiff rate, and I think it is because people want to see the whiff rate. The whiff rate is more the swing and a miss on these takes and not owning it ever, and then just being able to laugh at it and post it on social media and be like, look at this. I think that's what it's about on, all of these
getting
shows.
Getting freezing cold takes every day.
Yeah. I don't. This is me yelling at the clouds.
Yeah, pretty much.
Because I obviously don't get it.
But my hope for the NBA having some sort of, or ESPN having some sense of normalcy and actually covering the game of basketball is not doing real well right
well,
now.
Well, with that being said, let's talk fart jokes. That's it. That's kind of it, though.
Yeah.
You know?
It's, you know. We'll keep it on some sports. We'll go back to Big Ten Media Days
where
we've got Dan Lanning hitting the stage in Indianapolis here in hour number three here on Danny and Dusty, Tanya the Fan. Over the last couple days, we talked about the changing landscape of the NBA's new TV/media deal and the implications that it holds for the league going forward, because it's not just where it is and how you're going to get it, but what it means for the potential return of expansion, particularly to Seattle.
Yeah, it's one thing Adam Silver's always said, is once we get a new TV deal done, we will then start having that conversation about expansion. I think an 11-year, $76 billion TV deal, I think that's probably the one that he was talking about.
Yeah, and publicly, at the address at Summer League, he downplayed expansion for the first time. Mm-mm. Over the last couple of years. And what that is telling you is, remember, who does Adam Silver work for? The owners. What are the owners therefore saying? We want more money.
Mm-hmm. In expansion fees.
In the new team rights. That's what that is. Them saying we're good at 30, we don't want to split the pie between 30 and now 32 teams. Pay no attention to the man behind the glass. That is absolutely, unbelievably, horribly misguided. Look over here, look over here, look over here.
Or they're in a situation where they're like, okay, so we want to go to Vegas and Seattle, but LeBron's still playing and we know he's going to be a part owner in Vegas, so we can't really have this happening now.
Well, not just that.
We need Bronny to flame out this year, so then they trade him to Vegas and LeBron goes and signs there on his new team.
Well, I mean, there's also the idea of LeBron James might have to divest from the Fenway Sports Group if Fenway Sports Group ends up buying the Boston Celtics, because what do they own? The Boston Red Sox. They are Fenway Sports Group. So, therefore...
And the Man U? Or...
Liverpool.
Yeah.
And so there's some stuff there. But the other thing here is that they're saying they want to drive the price up. And one of the things that I was talking to movers and shakers about in Las Vegas was expansion and what the numbers are looking like. And
we're still looking at a half bill for expansion fee.
The total,
I'm talking just the expansion rights fee.
Billions? For just the rights.
Oh, boy.
Upwards of $7 billion to get a new team, whether it's Seattle or Las Vegas. Because
for just the expansion rights? That's not including
expansion price.
I'm just talking about you pay the league just for the right to pay more billions of dollars
to start your team. Billions for just rights fees for just the expansion team.
Jeez.
Yes. That is because here's what has changed. There are multiple interested parties. It's not just LeBron James and Fenway Sports Group, as much as they would like it to be that in Las Vegas.
You've got, the last expansion fee. Do you know what the last expansion fee was?
$300 million?
Yep. The Charlotte Bobcats back in 2004 paid $300 million.
Yeah.
That, and then it'll be about, $2.5 billion now?
Yeah, I think the number that I was told was somewhere between 2.2 and 2.5. For just the rights.
At that point, you've got to wonder, all right.
You're not getting singular owners.
How much more are we going to be able to make here?
Well, the reason they're doing this is because this is the last TV deal where linear TV is a part of this. That's an 11-year deal. Linear TV in 11 years will probably not exist.
Yeah.
Whew. And so what they're looking at now is, we've got the money that we've got now, so we need to make sure that we get a massive expansion rights fee to also help sustain ownership, because they are going to be giving up shares, small, but they will be giving up some. So they have to eat that first, and then they also have to find a way to make more money on it. So if you're injecting roughly $5 billion into it, that can cover up for your losses and get the
that is so crazy
the payouts for it. Now, as this pertains to expansion locally, as in the I-5 rivalry in Seattle, the group that has consistently come up as wanting to make the move is the ownership group of the Seattle Kraken.
Yeah, which also has Amazon
already backed and
CEOs in it. Climate Pledge Arena, obviously, is an Amazon. Is
named rights building.
Naming rights. You've got money into the Kraken already. And, oh, wait, who's the new partner broadcasting games?
Oh, Amazon.
Oh, I don't know. That may seem like a little bit of a conflict of interest, but we're not going to pay attention to that, apparently.
Yeah. So you've got Lewicki, who is the face of the Kraken.
Yeah, Todd Lewicki.
Yeah, and he, while they have not been public about this, I have heard multiple discussions that they are the interested party. God, I'm blanking on his name. Chris Hansen. The one that fell face first.
To catch Predator. No.
No. Fell face first in trying to bring Seattle back and taking Sacramento and going far too public, far too often, and way too loudly.
Way too early.
Has been, I was told, had been blacklisted, would not be allowed to be a part of an ownership group. However, I have since been told that that has changed if he wanted to be a silent partner. Which is, this is the way things are going, and this is what's important for the Portland Trailblazers. If you're one of those people who's like, Jody Allen needs to sell! Phil Knight, probably never going to be a owner of the Trailblazers. Now, could one of his kids in a couple of years, however that trust issue gets worked out, both through Nike and through the Trailblazers? Perhaps, but not as probably as an individual. Not because he doesn't have the money, but because the leagues now, unless you're Jeff Bezos or Elon Musk or Steve Ballmer, I'm talking one of the five richest people on the planet, the league wants ownership groups. Now, somebody still has to have the...
Why do they want the ownership groups, though? I mean, I understand capital. They're necessary because of the fact that these franchises are so expensive, mm-hmm. but ownership groups get business muddied up.
Yes.
And you have so many big swinging you-know-whats in a room... At that point, they're just going to start bickering with each other.
Which is what you have in Minnesota. But they want still somebody with major capital. Like, they want the Ballmers of the world. If Jeff Bezos...
Well, obviously, you need majority ownership.
Yes,
yeah.
But they still want that. But because it's getting so big, and I was talking to somebody about this at Las Vegas. Victor Wembanyama is very likely going to be the sports first... contracted $100 million a year athlete in North America.
Mm-hmm.
When that happens in 8 or 9 years and he's being paid $110 million a year and is a 5-year deal worth $580 million, these ownership groups are going to need to put $300+ million in escrow. To be able to do that across the league, you have got to have cash pools heretofore not
and that's
present.
That's where I was saying, at what point do you sit there with the expansion fees, mm-hmm. with the money, are people going to be like, all right, how much are we going to really be able to make off this? Because rich people will find it not to be as valuable anymore of an asset. If they're like, all right, so I have to put this much money up front, and then I have to commit on an annual basis X amount of dollars, mm-hmm. at some point, just like stolen bases in baseball, right? They were devalued by analytics. You're going to sit there and go, all right, is this really going to be where all of these franchises are going to continue to sell for record upon record upon record? Because, look, I know inflation's going up, but at some point, the price point's got to go too high. Yeah. And people are going to want to be getting out. And I think that for the leagues themselves, this is a really slippery slope, though. Mm-hmm. If you want that many cooks in your kitchen, if you have 32 NBA franchises eventually, and all of them you want to have ownership groups in, if those groups are, you know, 6 to 10 billionaires, at what point are you going, all right, who do we listen to and who do we tell to take a hike? Because you have far more owners than you do. You're looking at like 200 owners for 32 teams, and all of them feel like they should have a voice because they're putting up billions of dollars.
And you're putting up billions of dollars for the expansion teams before you even get to see anything.
Yikes. That's crazy. I'm interested to see how this works out, but it is fascinating that this is the first time that Adam Silver has not said boo about expanding in the NBA, because he's asked about it at Summer League. He's asked about it at the NBA Finals. He's asked about it at the All-Star break, at the State of the NBA. He's asked about it at the very beginning of the year when they do the kickoff series.
So you see all of these different mark points, and now what has changed is that they're not talking about it happening is such a amazing thing. And it's like, oh, yeah, they know that there's money on the table.
Yeah.
That's what this is.
Man.
And
yeah, they're still going to be really rich.
Yeah. And that's the thing is, and you're trying to get now while the getting's good.
Yeah.
Because you never know what the cycle is going to look like. And that's, I think when this is all said and done, what we're looking at right now is the first mark will be what this Boston team sells for. And yep. the thought process right now is one of the biggest brands in the world, not just in basketball, but in the world. It's going to sell for upwards of $6.5 billion.
And they're going to have a payroll that's, they're paying $50 million more in luxury tax than they are actually on the roster.
And wait till all of the contracts kick in next year.
Because Sam Hauser got $45 million.
I throw my hands up.
Holy guacamole.
So, also, the TNT did also issue a statement basically saying that we're very disappointed with the NBA.
And oh, no way!
We're going to be seeking legal recourse, which, like I said, what was it, Monday? There will be lawyers. TNT's going to sue.
I can't wait until Inside the NBA is just Inside Basketball.
On and it's, Amazon?
It's on TNT, and they don't show highlights. It's Kenny and Chuck and Shaq reenacting what happened on the floor, because they'll have no rights to show any of the footage from those games. And yet every player in the NBA will go on with them because they love Kenny, Shaq, Charles, and Ernie.
What if I also told you that ESPN now has the right for NBA Red Zone?
That's so stupid.
It's not Red Zone, but it is a live whip-around coverage, game to game to game, every game. ESPN has the rights to a studio show to give a damn about basketball.
Yeah.
Which,
because it's a highlight show. It's not like, it's not like Red Zone, because like when you said that, I was like, that's dumb, because Red Zone is scoring opportunities. Yeah. You're in
which
the red zone.
Every possession in the NBA.
You're just like, every time we go up the floor,
they're going to score.
But this is what this is what ESPN wants, is because the NBA is a highlight driven league. And what do all the kids take in on social media? They watch and take in basketball via highlights now.
And the terrible thing is, I read some of the verbiage from the ESPN press release. The player walk-ins was emphasized like a half dozen times.
What about the Stephen A. Smith walk-ins? Are we going to have those? That still bothers me.
It does. But that's the thing is, they made sure to drive home culture and lifestyle and fashion. And I'm like, can we make the game about the game?
No, that's not what ESPN does anymore.
God.
It isn't. And that's what sucks. It's like
they're taking the entertainment part of this as opposed to
I remember waking up every morning, walking downstairs, and you put SportsCenter on and you get ready for school.
Yep.
That was
our childhood.
That's what you did.
Yes.
And then when you got home from practice, you caught up on everything, watching SportsCenter at night, and they don't even care about giving you that anymore.
No, it's talk shows.
Now. Get Up and First Take, and we got First Things First on FS1, and they're all bad.
Yeah,
they're all bad.
As opposed to giving us SportsCenter.
Yes, and I don't know where they got that. And well, I mean, people are watching, obviously, but I don't know why. People are watching First Take still. Because their whiff rate, and I think it is because people want to see the whiff rate. The whiff rate is more the swing and a miss on these takes and not owning it ever, and then just being able to laugh at it and post it on social media and be like, look at this. I think that's what it's about on, you know, all of these
getting
shows.
Freezing cold takes every day.
This is me yelling at the clouds.
Yeah, pretty much.
Because I obviously don't get it.
But my hope for the NBA having some sort of, or ESPN having some sense of normalcy and actually covering the game of basketball is not doing real well right now.
Well, with that being said, let's talk fart jokes. That's it. That's kind of it, though.
Yeah.
You know?
It's, you know, We'll keep it on some sports. We'll go back to Big Ten Media Days We've got Dan Lanning hitting the stage in Indianapolis here in hour number three here on Danny and Dusty, Danny the Fan.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition. You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's good. Yes.
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Portrait pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.